Imagine earning continuing education credits while doing exactly what you're doing right now. Well, you can. Gable Media has revolutionized the way you earn your continuing education credits with a groundbreaking approach. Forget running around town and scouring the internet for credit-worthy courses. Fulfill your CE requirements effortlessly by listening to engaging podcasts just like the one you're listening to now. Our podcasts are designed to educate, entertain, and inspire, all in a user-friendly environment. But wait, there's more. Architects, Gable Media is also approved as an AIA Continuing Education Services provider. Upon completion, we handle everything, from reporting your hours directly to the AIA to storing your certificates in your personal Gable Media profile for your self-reporting needs. So follow the link in the show notes and start earning your credits in the most innovative and entertaining way possible with Gable Media.
Thank you to NCARB for their support of this podcast episode. Visit ncarb.org/AOP and contribute to the Analysis of Practice survey today. Context and Clarity has been called a community-based pro-practice masterclass for architects. It's awfully high praise, but since we began this journey back in April of 2020, we've certainly grown into a community of small firm architects, all focused on what matters most to their success. And by the way, it doesn't matter if you're the employee of a firm that's dreaming of going out on your own, or you've owned your own firm for 26 years. There's something here for everyone. And that's where you come in. Thanks for listening and welcome to the Context and Clarity podcast. Every week, we have a conversation with an expert or a thought leader on things that matter most to the success of architects just like you. Then we go backstage with someone from our community and we talk about what we learned, what our biggest takeaways were, and how we're going to apply what we heard to our own businesses. In this episode, we talked to Pascal Sablon. She's a senior associate at AdJ Associates Architects. She's the president-elect of the National Organization for Minority Architects and the founder and executive director of Beyond the Built Environment. I'll be honest, as we head into weeks where we have a Context and Clarity Live guest who will inspire 5 days worth of conversations about justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion topics, I have to make sure that I check myself at the door. Necessary or not, I always want to make sure that everyone knows, as the proverbial middle-aged white guy in the room, I know that I cannot share the experiences or perspectives of a person of color or a minority architect or anything but my own. I know that I'm not here to share wisdom or insights. I'm simply here to facilitate a conversation, to listen, and most importantly, to learn. And learn I did. Pascal carries a power and a passion that's unmatched. And I appreciate her for giving us all the grace and the space to fumble around as we try to get to a place of understanding and respect for a history and experiences that we may not have known before. Before we get into our conversation, if you aren't familiar with Pascal Sablon or her work, go check out Beyond the Built Environment and the Say It Loud exhibits, and then report back on what you took away from those. For this episode, our backstage guest is Morrisville, Vermont-based architect, artist, and activist Jay Caroli. Jay is the principal architect of Great Blue Heron Studio Architects and a managing member of development firm Place LLC. I'm curious to hear their takeaway, so let's go backstage and listen in as my co-host Catherine McPhail, Jay, and I all talk about our conversation with Pascal Sablon.
I thought that was just an awesome context and clarity.
Pascal is a force. I mean, I don't even know how else to describe her. I don't even think passion really does her justice. I mean, passion and energy and purpose and all driving towards a very clear vision, and she describes the world that she wants to see, and it was amazing and beautiful.
The world that I want to see is one that's free of racism, sexism, and other forms of oppression. So much of the work that I do is really about finding and sussing out the systematic issues and dismantling it. I get so tired of breaking shackles every day and chains every day. I get so amped and excited about celebrating and elevating. What does society look like in a just world? That's what I want to see. So the world I want to see is one that's finally free from deburdening people with oppressions and injustices and actually seeing people flourish and fly in their true selves and identities and through their passions.
I agree. It was an awesome conversation.
One thing I thought was interesting that she said was that in response to why is it that women have to be that much better or perfect all the time to be taken seriously. And she was saying that she puts all this effort into what she does, and it has come to pass then that she's got all these awards and accomplishments and everything because she gives so much of herself. But I just thought that was an interesting truth that I think a lot of women have about having to put away as much as they can and more than they probably should for their own personal relationships and health into their career to be taken seriously.
And did she start by saying, you know, I, as a Black person, I was used to doing this, and then I became a mother, and it just exponentially became true?
Well, I think she was saying as a mother, she realized that women have challenges as well as just, she was just relating to the Black people having challenges before she became a mother.
First of all, to see someone that's as accomplished as she is, no matter what her background is amazing. But, you know, given her background, the story about first year, I don't know if it was first day, but very early in her academic career.
During my first/second week of college in architecture school, a professor asked me and another student to stand. And so we stood up thinking we're being volunteered to start an effort or whatever. And he said, okay, so these two, for example, will never become architects because they're Black and because they're women. And okay, you guys can sit down now. That was the lesson of the day, right? So I sit down, my peer to my left, Simon C., I'll never forget, said, Pascal, that better not be the reason why you stop. You better persevere and prove him wrong, right? And that was the words me as a competitive person needed to hear to persevere through that moment. But when I do my public speaking and my lectures, I often ask the audience to stand if they've ever been told that they're inadequate because of their gender and race. And people are standing. People are standing in schools of architecture. People are standing in conferences. People are standing in professional settings. And so what I'm trying to say is that it's upsetting, it's shocking, but it doesn't just happen to me. It is actually part of the system of maintaining or reducing the number of women and people of color in the profession.
The professor having the two Black women in the class stand up and say these two won't make it, that's just mind-boggling to me. To see someone be able to take all of that, and she talked about that professor basically, that experience, that event basically becoming a motivator for her to do all of these things. But to be able to synthesize all of this and focus it in a very pointed direction, I think is, again, I'm back to awesome or amazing or some A word that doesn't seem to do it justice, but inspiring, certainly.
The whole conversation was really enlightening for me. And part of it was the week's conversation in context and clarity leading up to this was very difficult for me. And I have been vocal about a lot of these issues for a long time. And I'm not sure why I was struggling. I think my realization was that to hear her speak so well about these things that we struggled all week to talk about. I don't know if that makes any sense or resonates.
It does to me. I can see what you're saying because Pascal Sablon comes out of the gate and you know, I keep saying this over and over, but she's so passionate, so driven, so focused, and speak so eloquently about all of these things that we struggled with all week. and just, you know, puts the point on it and drives the nail home. And I really appreciate that about this conversation. It's you said enlightening. It's enlightening for me as well. I learned a lot of things in this conversation today. So you asked if it resonated. Yeah, absolutely resonated with me.
One part that I kind of found surprising was when someone asked, how do we include everyone at the table, invite everybody to the table? And she had said that it's all about trust, and it's a trust building exercise based on whether you take any action on what they told you. And so that's how you get people to keep coming back, is by actually doing something with the information instead of re-traumatizing them for no reason.
Please stop asking community people to come in and fill surveys and come eat cold pizza and some flat soda to talk about your project and get post-it notes of what they want. And then once they move, go, that doesn't match my aesthetic. It doesn't matter. Because the next person who comes to that community and says, hey, I want to engage you, they'll be like, man, keep it. Keep it. And that's what I'm saying. We need to really, really, really be systematic.
So I felt like, oh, I mean, that makes total sense, but I found it surprising. Somehow I was surprised by that answer.
I love that answer.
Yeah, I love that answer too. And I was wondering what we're going to do about it. Because I feel like we've had these other conversations about inclusivity and everything. And what have we actually done?
Yeah. Why should my discomfort, right? If I own that, why should my discomfort have anything to do with the conversation? I hope other people heard that. All right. I know there are people that don't show up for these conversations and these types of week because it's uncomfortable. And so hopefully that statement, it may not resonate, but hopefully it challenges you in a good way, or even a bad way, really. It motivates you to show up and be a part of the conversation. Just listen. Just come and listen and be open.
And thanks, Jeff. I've heard you say, you know, I don't know, and I'm gonna talk about this, and I might get it wrong, but I'm gonna continue to talk about it, and I try and do the same thing. But
yeah, I think that's important, right? If I waited until I understood the experiences of a young African American woman architect, I'm never going to be a part of the conversation. And I think Catherine, you just said it. She mentioned trust as an exercise in trust. One of the things that I think we have done well at Context and Clarity is we have developed a safe space for people to come and have a voice and have these conversations. I have to trust that when I show up for one of these conversations, if I completely step in it, if I completely, and, you know, from my point of view, it's going to be unintentional. If I really offend somebody or I really take something completely off the rails, it's going to be due to my lack of knowledge. It's going to be due to my lack of experience, you know, those types of things for me. But I have to trust that there are people in the room that will accept that, and that will give me a little bit of grace around that, maybe some forgiveness around that. And my hope is that someone will correct me and set me off on the right path. I think that's what's necessary in these conversations. And I, you know, I might be wrong about that.
So if the question is, what are we going to do, or what application can I apply after listening to her? And I think she challenged us, or she didn't challenge us. She just said, you know, don't invite me and then do nothing.
We need to really, really, really be systematic and understanding that when we say uncomfortable conversations, uncomfortable for who? I'm in a constant state of uncomfortability. So why are we acknowledging your discomfort to have a conversation when we're not excusing the fact that I'm already living in that space? So uncomfortability is an irrelevance for me. I want to know about the action. When I tell you this, what's going to happen? Are you going to say, wow, that was interesting, and just go about your day and maintain the same thing that you've always been doing? Or am I motivating or inspiring somebody on this community to do something different, to evaluate and assess differently?
I'm really inspired by Pascal to go and be a disruptor. And I think I've been a disruptor in the past and very purposefully made people uncomfortable. And I don't want to do it that way anymore. I want to do it with love and eloquence. That's my takeaway, and that's what I want to apply this conversation to how do I make white men uncomfortable as a white, able-bodied, cisgender male? How do I go out and make other white men uncomfortable and bring them into the conversation? So make them uncomfortable, but still beg them in to the conversation.
Let's take a quick break to share more about our sponsors. I'll bet you have ideas about how to improve the profession of architecture. InCarb wants to hear from you. Their ongoing analysis of practice study is your opportunity to shape the future of architecture. Share your experiences and your insights from working in architecture and tell InCarb what you wish they would do better. Your feedback is important because it will help guide changes to the national experience and examination programs for architects, and it will impact what being a licensed architect could look like. Whether you're an architect or you work with architects, InCarb wants to hear from you. Make sure that your voice is heard. Contribute to the analysis of practice study today. Sign up at incarb.org/AOP. And now, let's get back to the conversation.
One thing that it actually came from Christian, and Christian posted that Black women make up 0.27% of architects.
Pascal Sablon is the 315th living African-American woman architect in the United States. And there are 115,000, there are currently, not in history, there are currently 115,000 registered or licensed architects in the United States. And that is, 315 is an amazingly small number. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling. There's another initiative out there is it called the First 500, I believe? Pascal was talking about that, and it's 520 something, 530 something, somewhere in that neighborhood. And one of the things that I had was in 2021, Pascal was awarded the AIA Whitney M. Young Jr. Award, and there's a famous quote from Whitney Young. He delivered a speech to the AIA in 1968, and just a small portion of that speech, he said, "You are not a profession that has distinguished itself by your social and civic contributions to the cause of civil rights. You are most distinguished by your thunderous silence and your complete irrelevance." And that's a painful quote for a lot of architects. And I think it's 100% true. So how do we make room for those people, whatever their experience is? How do we clear a path? And as Pascal said, it's not about lowering the bar. It's about realizing that there are other ways. So that to me, I think is something in there is something that I can apply.
The part where she was talking about how to firms promote people, what are they expecting people to do to get promoted, that they should publish that so that you can see if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing or not. And then they can look and see if there are reasons for promoting people, if it's equitable or not, you know? So I thought that was a good, she had a lot of good actionable items that people could actually do.
By no means is anyone asking for the bar to be lowered. And I want to be very clear about that, right? We're not asking for the bar to be lowered, but what we are asking is that we take a look at the systems to see if there is embedded racist and sexist components that is hindering qualified people from consideration, right? And when we talk about from the lens of a firm structure, right, that requirements of what it takes to go from a junior architect to an architect lead in your office, those steps and what it takes to get there is very ambiguous and not very is not published, right? And it requires you to create a relationship with leadership that helps guide you and mentor you in that capacity. And so if you do not connect with one of the leaders, you really are outside of that no. So part of the justice building there is to have and encourage firms to publish what it requires for promotions. What is exactly your role for your title, right? Sometimes people are like, oh, you're underperforming. Okay, where was the list that told me what you required and expected from me in the first place, right? And so that's something that we need to recognize is the access to information and ensure that the criteria in which we're looking at is equitable.
I hope that was a call to action for people. You know, I'm thinking back to the part even when she's talked about the community meetings, right? And you invite the public and the cold pizza and the flat soda. And she said, you know, everybody got their post-it note and then the meeting's over and the team, you know, says, well, we're not doing anything because it doesn't match up with our aesthetic, I think is how she said it. And I don't know about anybody else. I don't know what kind of projects others have been involved in, but I have actually seen that. I've been a part of those, that type of situation. And what she said is exactly right. Why would you show up again? And there are people that are showing up and, oh, all voices are important. You know, here's your post-it note, et cetera. They're not stupid. They recognize the fact that nothing that they put on a post-it note or any of their neighbors or family or friends put on a post-it note showed up in that project. So I hope that's a big call to action for people as well, people in the profession as well, because that's that when she said that, that was to me, that was like a kick in the face. You know, it's like, I have been in that conversation before. I know it happens. And I think it happens a lot. So hopefully we can change that. You know, that gets to the, you know, maybe the beyond the built environment piece of it. But I hope that comment that she made or that those thoughts that she was sharing have an impact on folks.
I joined NOMA this week. It hadn't occurred to me that I could join NOMA. I'm not a minority architect. But I can join and I can pay my fee, and then my fee goes towards that organization and that organization's vision and mission.
Yeah, I think that's probably something that a lot of us don't think about is, oh, well, how could I as not a minority architect be a part of that? So it's good to know. And it's also important to point out, right, if you're listening to this and, okay, you know, women architects or Black women architects, it's beyond the built environment, and NOMA is not, and I don't mean this to be demeaning in any way, but it's not just about women architects either. You know, if you go to beyondthebuilt.com and go to the Say It Loud tab, you can see there are a number of exhibitors from the Say It Loud initiative, and they're all types of people of color. And as Pascal said, as she was talking about Say It Loud, I think it's in 2 weeks, the exhibit is going to open in Australia. And wherever it is, wherever it shows up, it features stories of people from the community, people of color, women, minorities from the community who are architects and designers. So that's one of the things that I love about that particular is that a kid or an adult could see the exhibit and go, oh, you know, here's my neighbor. Here's somebody in my town or my city, wherever they are, that looks like me. And they do this work. You know, maybe they're inspired by that, or maybe they have a different connection, something like that. So I think it's, you know, there's so much culturally, and you know, there's so much diversity that we should be celebrating. And I applaud Pascal for all of her initiatives, because it's really amazing the voices that she's elevating, the projects and the work and everything else that she's elevating now around the world. These are conversations that we need to continue to have and have more of, and probably more often. And again, I think from the point of view of, I'm here to listen and understand. So that's another big takeaway to wrap this up. But any last thoughts from you, Jay, or you, Catherine, about what you're going to do with this, or how we, maybe as even as a community, how we can.
I'm going to go do that magazine, the magazine, writing to the magazines, as she asked us to.
I also launched another initiative as part of my Dismantling Injustice initiative called Say It With Media. And what I'm doing there is asking media, prints, and publications to track and publish the amount of women and BIPOC designers that they put out in their platforms per year, and increase it by 5% annually until a minimum of 15%. Now, the reason for this, like I love my favorite quote is, you know, you can't manage what you don't measure. And so, yes, everybody's saying, yay, 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 more diversity. And we definitely see the push in February for Black History Month. And we see the push in March for Women's Month. And we see the push again in September, October. Okay, but can we do this all year round? Can we be committed to following this content? And the first thing they always say is, we're scared we won't have enough content. And I said, don't you worry. I got Say Aloud exhibitions coming everywhere across the world. There's constantly going to be content for you. And if you really think we're not already here doing amazing work, just hasn't been shined the light on us, you're disadvantaged, right? And so far we have 6 publications who signed up, and we have a collective 353,000 monthly impressions from the publications who signed up. And that, I say to my community, right? These are the publications who care to hear your story. When you finish a project, this is who you're sending those images and those narratives to, because they want to celebrate you. And I'm asking us, all of us in this community, to reach out to these publications and say, can you sign on to this pledge? Because I personally have touch point with every single major publication in architecture and landscape. And there's a lot of hesitation. But yeah, it's true, because it's just me asking. But what if there was one day where we all sat down and we all sent that email? And so on the webpage now, I have a thumbnail for every publication, their estimated monthly impression. And when you click the thumbnail, an email auto-populated with their contact information for the executive editor or whoever that would need to comes up, and you can say, I want you to sign up for this pledge and push that agenda forward. But I think really it's not just a matter about us documenting ourselves, although important. And it's not just a matter of heralding us during, you know, the few months of the year that it's focused on. But it's also recognizing that it takes the industry of publications to take on this role also, to amplify our voice, amplify our work at the same time.
Go to the Beyond the Built Environment website, which is beyondthebuilt.com. And Pascal has set it up so you can click on thumbnails and it will populate emails for you. You can reach out to publications and request that they cover and highlight great diverse designers. And so the way that you get there is beyondthebuilt.com/sayitwithmedia. It makes it very easy for you to reach out and say, hey, we want to see more of these people. We want to hear about more of these people being featured in your publication and have their voices elevated. So that's something that we can all do. And it's pretty easy to do. So I'd encourage everybody to do that.
This episode of the Context and Clarity podcast is supported by InCarb. You have the power to influence the future of how architects are educated, trained, and licensed. Take the Analysis of Practice survey today. Well, what did you think? Did you hear something in there that you can use in your practice today? If you are so inspired by this conversation that you'd like to watch the entire Context and Clarity Live episode, head on over to the Entree Architect YouTube channel. There's a playlist there that has all of the full Context and Clarity Live episodes. And if you want more of the Context and Clarity podcast delivered to you every week, give us a thumbs up and subscribe wherever you consume podcasts. If you like content like this, check out Gable Media. It's a multimedia network for people that care about the built environment, and it's the home of Context and Clarity. With Gable's growing family of podcasts and video channels, I know you'll find something there that interests you. You can learn more at gablemedia.com. That's GABLmedia.com. And one last thing before you go. If the topic of today's episode is of particular interest to you, join me over on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern inside the Entree Architect Community Facebook group. That's where every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern, I host Context and Clarity Conversations, and we take topics like this and we dig deeper. We have a conversation in real time to try to find more clarity around the things that matter most to you. So thanks for listening. I hope our time together has inspired you to think about your community and your practice and how you can support those around you. We'll be back here again next week. And in the meantime, I hope you'll join me and the Entree Architect community on Facebook today at 4 p.m. Eastern so that we can help each other find more clarity around the topics that matter most, no matter what your context is.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.